Welcome into episode 4 of Comics for All. First of all, we want to thank everybody so much for all your patience. We have been working really hard to get you this episode, and it was such a great conversation. We actually had to break it up into 2 parts. It is so long and so wonderful. We had a blast making this one. We hope you all enjoyed as well. There were a couple of audio issues. We are working on some of those things, getting everybody on the right page with these, so we really do appreciate all the patience. But more than anything, we appreciate all the love and support you guys have been giving us so early on here, and we can't thank you all enough for what you're doing. We're having amazing conversations on Twitter with so many of you, great feedback on Stitcher and iTunes, and it's just a blast. It has been so much fun, and we can't wait to give you all more episodes. Episode 5 is already in the works. We'll hopefully have it out very shortly as well, but enjoy this part 1 of 2 parts, episode 4, as we talk about the new Solo movie that was released. We also talk about some DC and Marvel things that we would like to see happen to help improve some of those things that we love about their counterparts so much. We also give a lot of love to Jim Starlin, as well as some indie comics, and the Stuff of Legend from Third World Studios is also out as well. So we talk a little bit about that guy as well. So once again, we thank you so much. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment, share, and leave us those 5-star reviews or any kind of comments you can wherever you download the episodes. We really can't tell you how much it helps out the show, and it really makes us love doing this for all of you so much more. Thanks again, and enjoy the show. Oh, and one last thing. If you want to join in any of these conversations, make sure to follow us at All for Comics on Twitter. And you can even hit us up there. Let us know who you want to talk to. We're all hopping on that Twitter as often as possible to reach out to all of you and have some great conversations and have a lot of fun as well. And also, don't forget to check out our home site, malice-corp.com, where we are a family of Malice Corp podcasts. It really helps us out as well. Visit the links on the website to Amazon to help us out, and let everybody know when you get to the site who brought you there. Let them know that Comics for All sent you. And once again, thank you and enjoy the show. Because there's too many things tearing us apart in this damn world. I want to talk about something that puts us together. So comic books it is. Comic books for life. Comic books for all.
And here we go.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight.
It doesn't matter.
Well, not only is Marley drunk, but episode 4 is drunk off its ass with excitement, everybody. Welcome in to All for Comics. Comics for All. Episode 4. Good.
I can totally touch my nose.
Perfect.
It might take me a little bit of time, though.
So we've had quite the break. I want to tell everybody thank you for their patience and excitement. We've been getting a ton of great feedback from all the fans and people out there supporting the show. We can't tell you how much we appreciate that. It's one of those things to me. I know, you know, we had some real life stuff going on, and we wanted to make sure that this next episode was going to be a great one filled with amazing content. And I sit here and I try to think about things we can plan on and do more. And then I realize I have some of the best damn people around. Let's just record a damn episode. So without further ado, let's record a damn episode, folks. Mr. Max, how you doing, man?
Hey, doing really well. Been a busy like couple months, but it's nice to be back in the swing of things and recording. So pretty stoked.
Awesome. Marley, how you been?
I'm really, really good. I had a nice debate with my students before the end of the school year as to whether or not you could be a Marvel versus DC person. And when they asked me that, I told them yes. And they sat at me and didn't understand that you could actually like both.
You could like both. It's possible.
You could like both.
It's possible.
You can't like Superman and Batman at the same time. That's the big caveat.
That's the issue. Only one of the super famous DC heroes.
Only one.
No, makes sense. Pete, how about you, man? How's life, dude?
Life is beautiful all the time.
Nice.
I'm working for a living and working, but that's helping me pay for not only food and shelter, but comics, and it's a good thing.
And then what else do you need, man? What else do you need? I'm in. Well, sweet, everybody. So let's, there have been some big things going on. There have been a lot of things going on, especially in the comic book world. This is, I think it's going to be the summer for comic books, man. We just had another huge movie drop. I think we talked a little bit about Infinity Wars last time we were on the show, but, once again,
spoiler alert, people died.
Just a few. And you're totally lying. They didn't die. They didn't die. What are you talking about? They disappeared. They disappeared. But we also had Solo.
Original source material.
Going for the elitist status. I like it, Marley. But we also had Solo drop another Star Wars anthology film. Did everybody get a chance to watch it yet?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Nice.
No, but I did not get a chance to watch it. I want to watch it soon, though. My students came back and told me not to go and see it.
I believe it.
How about you? Yeah,
I'm just one who's suffering from a little bit of Star Wars saturation too. So I'm still putting it on the list. I just put it behind things like Deadpool. I admit it.
Yeah, no, for sure, absolutely, and yes, we did have Deadpool as well. Did everybody get to see Deadpool?
Yes.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think you'd have to revoke my nerd card if I didn't go and see Deadpool, and then immediately go home and watch Deadpool 1 again.
And go watch Deadpool.
Which I did.
Good.
Which I did.
Well, one of the things I'll have to say, so for you guys, I mean, you know, Solo is definitely it totally makes sense, Pete, that, you know, a little bit of Star Wars oversaturation could definitely hurt. You know, it is one of those things where when you're creating those events for Star Wars films, there is that much more excitement. And we're kind of getting one every year, whether it's the anthology or whether it's an inline Skywalker film. It does take a little bit away. I think I will have to say it's not as special with that kind of going on. But with that being said, I actually really enjoyed Solo. I thought it was a fun movie. Max, what did you think about it since you actually watched it?
Yeah, I mean, I think like the oversaturation thing, there is something to be said there because this was coming out only, you know, 5 months after The Last Jedi. And then you also had all of this sort of like bad press, you know, swirling around the film and the loss of those directors and, you know, Ron Howard coming on board to sort of save the film. So I think that it suffered from a lot of, you know, detractors in that way. But I'm really biased, so it's hard for me. I can't, you could throw me a new Star Wars movie every month and I'd be happy with it. You know, I watch Star Wars constantly and then I go home and play Battlefront 2 and, you know, I can't get enough of it. So, but I actually, you know, I went into the movie with an open mind and I knew, you know, obviously that they're just trying to build upon this sort of history of one of our favorite characters. And, you know, overall, I actually liked the film. I actually had a really good time and, you know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. So
nice.
You know, I think you pegged it for me why it's lower on my list is because it is that oversaturation. I didn't realize it was only 5 months. Like, I grew up with the original trilogy as a kid. And so when they dropped the remastered versions and you could go and see them in theater, that was like the big event for me as a kid because, like, now I got the theater experience. And then when I found out that they were doing the prequel trilogy, it was like, holy cow, we got to go see this. And I was also young enough that for me, the prequel trilogy wasn't terrible. As an adult, going back and watching it, the second movie is nothing but like painful, oh girl, ditch that date right now moments.
If I may, this episode brought to you by It's Coarse and It Gets Everywhere.
Oh, you sand, you.
Brought to you by the letter sand.
Now back to our show.
But yeah, I mean, they've done a nice job with this subsequent set of movies, but then like to have them so much when it's like you'd have to have waited years, decades to get this prequel trilogy. And I will fully admit that I'm also one of those nerd kids who had like the Star Wars essential guide to characters where it had like the backstories and first appearances and statistics for all of the characters that you ever met through the books and the movies. But now I'm a little hesitant to go and see like the Solo origin story because they already messed up Boba Fett with the prequel trilogy. And I don't want to see what they do with Solo.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I mean, I think that like, you know, the oversaturation is okay so long as the quality of the films retain it a certain level, I think. And
yeah,
you know, but I mean, I think that they probably would have been way better served understanding like the problems that they had directorially with Solo and other problems to like push it out, like maybe and release it like either in the fall or in the winter, especially because holy crap, this is a movie that was coming out like directly after Infinity War and Deadpool 2.
Yeah, talk about competition. You know,
so yeah, I mean, it's definitely on murderer's row of competition right there. Yeah. Holy hell.
Yeah. And it's sad to think that like, you know, here's a movie, here's Solo, and it grosses like an enormous amount of money, and yet it's still seen as a failure. And then you have every blog and every website online talking about how it didn't gross enough money. And yeah, that's kind of a bummer, because I think then that, you know, gives the studio indicators that, okay, well, maybe we'll, you know, not do this any again. And I think that that's a disservice to the fans that really love the genre. So
yeah, I mean, Solo's done internationally over $250 million, you know, and it's one of those things that's less than 3 weeks out and it's still considered a flop in Star Wars standard, right? And here's the thing, I think, you know, I've heard it quoted before, but there's no bigger person to hate Star Wars films than Star Wars fans, right? And I think, you know, we had these huge complaints for so long, for, you know, Revenge of the Sith was released in like 2005. We did not get another Star Wars film for 10 years,
right?
And
right,
you know, all that whole time we're like, when's another Star Wars, and then now we're getting like kind of back to back, and it's like we're getting too many Star Wars now, like it's just we can't be pleased as fans. So
it is kind of like in 1939, you had The Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind both up competing for awards. Like, they were both released. So it's like, well, which one do you choose is the best film of the year? Like, you can't, if that makes sense. Where it's like, here's Star Wars being released at the same time as Deadpool and Avengers, where it's like, you can't really compete with that either.
Well, it's just one of those things. I think what's really great about this summer in general, though, is we got Avengers Infinity Wars. We got, you know, we got Black Panther at the beginning of the year. We're going to have Ant-Man later in the year. You know, actually, we're going to have Ant-Man in like 3 weeks. We got Jurassic World coming this upcoming Friday. We have Solo. We have Deadpool. We are going to have a monster summer of films here. And I think no matter where you threw Solo, it was going to be in a tough spot, no matter where it was going to be.
I was really surprised that they didn't like retain the whole, you know, let's release the movie in December, because that's what they did with the last, you know, The Force Awakens, The Last Jedi.
Yeah,
that's what they did with Rogue One as well. And so I figured, well, you know, let's have it in December. And then it's exactly a year out from The Last Jedi and exactly a year out from the next Star Wars film. And I think then that would have like not only helped a little bit with that brand fatigue, but it might have helped them, you know, market the film a heck of a lot better. And maybe in post-production, really clean up a lot of the things that they might have needed to do. So
honestly, like, my biggest thing with this film is I got to see all of the firsts for Han Solo, who by far is one of my favorite characters in all of Star Wars. But, you know, I got to see his first time on the Falcon. I got to see his first time with Chewie flying the Falcon. I got to see how he gets his weapons. I got to see, you know, I got to see all of those big iconic moments of Solo. And I think that this film, more so maybe even more than Rogue One, was kind of that fan service, like, we got to have a Solo film, right? Like, we got to have a Han Solo story. And Rogue One was something a little different, where it was like we got an anthology story, not a character story. And maybe that's where we might want to be careful. I know we're all clamoring right now for a Kenobi film or even a Boba Fett film, but maybe we need to stick to the Rogue One's method, where maybe we don't get a bunch of people whose names we've all heard thrown over the universe, and we get a fantastic story around this universe rather than a character development, you know?
I'd be happy with that. I mean, I'd be happy again with almost anything, but you know, I mean,
yeah, absolutely. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're totally right. I think, you know, they were able to capture a lot of like the mystique revolving around Han Solo. And I thought that was good. I mean, we got to give a quick shout out to Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian. He was absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think the film overall really had a feel for Star Wars. I really, that's one of the reasons why I really liked Rogue One, is because it was kind of gritty. It was kind of dumpy. You know, at times you had that sort of like Star Wars ambiance, that Star Wars feel to the film. And they did a good job with that in Solo.
Yeah,
overall.
It, it had a lot of like that grittiness and that seedy underbelly that, you know, like the first films had, where it was like right. this canteen in Tatooine, where you're like, this cantina might not be the place I want to go for a date. Let's not.
Well, and Chewbacca was fantastic in Solo too. I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but I mean, just seeing, you know, how he becomes part of, you know, the universe that we all know and love. I mean, it's great. And yeah. or at least how he like meets Han Solo, and it's well, fantastic.
Well, I will say that you guys have convinced me to leave my house and go to the movies.
And if that didn't, Marley, if you thought Von Doom looked good in his suit, wait till you see Lando in a Hawaiian print cape and cowl.
You know, let me tell you what. The only person I want to see in Hawaiian print is my dad and my boyfriend. Anybody else?
There are some fantastic outfits that Lando Calrissian wears in this film that were wonderful. I was a big fan of them. So good on you, Donald Glover, and good on everybody that was a part of this film. I think that more so than anything, you know, you talk about taking risks in films. But taking risks around one of the most beloved, iconic characters of a film is even more of a daunting task, and good on them to pull off what they did. I really enjoyed it. I think it's getting too much flack for what it is and what people are trying to gripe upon. I do recommend people going out and watching it, especially in the theater, because that's where, you know, if you're going to listen to the Millennium Falcon start up and fly around space, it needs to be in a theater. Don't do that at home, so...
Totally.
Yeah, I have to say, having surround sound for certain movies like Deadpool 2 was absolutely amazing.
For sure. Pete?
My parents do have a pretty sweet surround sound system. Okay. But their Big Papa Matt may have sold me on going to see, making sure to see Solo in the theaters, because I've wanted to see it.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing as we go that it's been less about the saturation for me and more just about the fact that it's Solo, a Star Wars story. So I looked at that and literally thought, that looks really cool. I'm excited for Donald Glover. It's a young Han Solo movie. That sounds fun. But there are no stakes in it for our central characters.
Oh, for sure.
I know they're going to be okay. Oh, but there's going to be other central characters. And yes, just like everybody else, I'm not going to care about them as much as I'm going to do about Han and Chewie, no matter how good the other actors and actresses are, no matter how hard they try. I'm sorry, but I'm really not going to. It's just going to be true.
I 100% agree with you on all accounts, except for Woody Harrelson was fantastic as always.
He was really good.
I was almost as excited about seeing Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian as seeing that, oh, Woody Harrelson's in it. That did make me happy.
Woody is fantastic.
I have to say that is a point in favor of Rogue One's story, was that it was like, here you had characters you knew nothing about, and you had a fantastic story. And I literally, that's probably my favorite of the new movies that have come out, where you are waiting on the edge of your seat, like, please tell me you make it out alive. Please tell me you make it out alive. Like, how is this story going to end? Because I have no idea. I've never seen you guys before. I haven't heard your names at all anywhere. You're not mentioned on a plaque on a wall. You're not mentioned in a corridor. Like, oh, I'm on my way to see this person or that. Like, oh, get on the comms with so-and-so. No. It's just, how is this going to end?
Yeah. And see, that's kind of where I was going, because every... I have not cared about every criticism, because every criticism, even though a lot of it does seem sincere and not just trying to start trouble, it seems like a fair bit sincere, and you know, that's fair, but it seems like every criticism is just how the franchise is being handled, and like the criticisms aren't talking about, okay, there was this problem with the movie, there was this problem with the movie.
Yeah,
it seems like the critics are saying nothing about the movie, and like everybody who has seen it is saying positive things. But, you know, so I was like, okay, I'm still optimistic. But Big Papa Matt here is the very first one I heard say there were risks taken. Mm-hmm. And that was exactly what I was not expecting. So now I'm intrigued, because I also know he's not going to blow smoke on my butt.
Yeah.
I think he's right too. And I think there were risks taken for sure in the film. And I also, just to go back to, you know, Matt's points too, is that like, I do think that the Star Wars universe, while it's great for, you know, the hardcore fans, like any movie is going to be good for like someone like me. But I think that overall it would be good though, if we went into more Rogue One territory where they are exploring new characters and they are, you know, exploring, you know, corners of the galaxy that we haven't seen before. for, you know, places and creatures and droids that we haven't seen before. And that's what made, and I totally agree with Marley, that's what made like Rogue One so great. It is by far my favorite Star Wars movie that has been released, you know, since the original trilogy. Because you had those characters that, you know, the beloved sort of fan service characters like Tarkin was there, and you had Mon Mothma and people like that. But you also had this group of you know, rogues essentially that you didn't know what was going to happen to them, and you know, you grew to like understand what Jyn Erso was all about, and you know, seeing Cassian and seeing him as part of the Rebel Alliance shoot a guy, you know, just to get information. I mean, at the very beginning, it automatically instills those stakes in the film, and you're like, wow, this is awesome. And that's why I really loved that film. And I think that would be, while I loved Solo, I thought it was really, really fun. I think that would be the direction really to go for the studio, is to expand this universe and bring us some new people, you know, and have those emotive stakes in these films so that, you know, it can keep that magic alive. You know?
Well, and honestly, Pete, you had one as well, but real fast, like, and here's where I really agree with you, Max, on this was, you know, I would rather watch a film around Jyn Erso and Cassian. And even like the guy Donnie Yen plays, the blind, you know, Jedi, you know, temple, sage. And I would rather watch stories around that than like a Boba Fett movie, because I don't want Boba Fett. I want a Mandalorian. I want a Mando film, you know, like I think some of those characters are getting overblown. And one last piece, and I'll let Marley and Pete go real fast. But the other reason why I really think, you know, for people who should go watch Solo, is if you were a fan of the TV show Rebels, there are some really cool callbacks to the show Rebels in this film.
Big time, big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like I want to see more films like Rogue One where it takes an event we're already familiar with, or a scene, or an area, and just fills it in more. Tell us about what happened between Yavin and Hoth. Tell us more. Show us this other side to the rebellion. You know, we're familiar with this rebellion that's filled with senators who weren't happy with Coruscant anymore. We've seen what happens with Alderaan. What about the militant side of it that Jyn Erso left? What about those people who felt that casualties and bombs and war by any means for freedom was okay? Tell us more about, because they can't have been the only two groups. Tell us more. Show us more people. Show us more sides. Or take some obscure character that, you know, people don't see an awful lot, or somebody we haven't seen in the movies at all that only came up in the books. I mean, take somebody who's even friend, like a fan favorite, like Mara Jade, and tell her story.
Oh, God. If they introduce Mara Jade back into this, oh, yes.
Please
find a way to introduce Mara Jade back into this universe.
Give me a Mara Jade movie. Like, she doesn't need to end up the way she does in the books. Just start her off there in the mall.
Yeah, she doesn't need to become Mara Jade Skywalker. She can just be Mara Jade.
She doesn't. She can just be Mara Jade. She can die at the end for all I care. Give me an ending I can't predict.
There you go.
And tell me a story that I have no idea where it's going to go.
Yeah. Pete.
And show me more of this world that we've grown to love, and just fill in those gaps for me. Like, it's not, and that's what Rogue One did really well, is that you had these characters who were central to it. You had Jyn Erso, you had Cassian, and then you had your big heroes who were just on the periphery. Like, that was the picture, like the bigger picture that this slice fit into. Like, yeah, those people are important. But this is what's important right now, is getting those Death Star plans. That wasn't Leia's job right now. That's Leia's job after this.
Yep.
That was like, dang. Such a good movie. Sorry.
Love is not something to apologize for.
Never.
Love is not something
never
to apologize for.
So back to some of our recent movies, and one of those cool things, and unless you had anything else, Pete, that you want to talk about with the films or anything like that.
Well, I don't feel like it's a necessary closer, but I feel like it'd be a fun closer since I'm the other guy who just hasn't seen it yet. Because, you know, partly because, like, okay, it looks good, but it's not something new. It's not something out in left field. Where you guys had my brain going that entire time was, yeah, I want to see something else like Rogue One, where it, spoiler territory, you know, ends at the very beginning of New Hope. You know, it even ends at the very beginning of New Hope. And then I realized, and I'm too, and we don't even know what Rian Johnson's trilogy, you know, what he wants it to be about.
True.
And then, hang on. I hear you, but I'm not. Let me finish. Think of it this way. What if we had a trilogy that started off with Bosk getting his marching orders from Lord Vader? Number two, we get Dengar getting his marching orders from Lord Vader. Then number three, IG-8 getting his marching orders from Lord Vader. And that's the beginning of the first movie where it shows all three, but then it only goes to Bosk, and then we go to Dengar exclusively the second movie, and IG-88 exclusively for the third movie, and that's the beginning, because it's literally a trilogy about where those bounty hunters went after they got their orders in Empire Strikes Back.
I was hoping for more of like a Three Amigos style.
Yeah, absolutely, right?
Yeah. What is wrong with me that only, I can immediately picture that?
Only if Alan Tudyk's willing to do the voice for IG-88, just like he did for K2SO. Yes. So.
Got it. Oh my gosh.
Shoot, that was him and iRobot. It's not like he's not pretty practiced at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
I would like to point out that this was one of the jokes that was on the internet about the Rogue One movie was... Oh, stills from the sequel to Rogue One already on the internet, and it showed Leia there in the corridor with R2-D2 putting the plans in.
Nice.
Like, fantastic. Yeah, that's the sequel to Rogue One, you know.
Fantastic. So, with other news out in the world, we did get some GameStop possibly going to be selling comic books. I don't know if this was set in stone or not. We saw a little bit of blurbs about this. I don't know. Your guys' general thoughts and feelings on a major retailer like this starting to do comic books?
Go ahead, Marley.
I don't think they're going to have enough inventory space to have the variety that people would like. But I mean, I part of me says, yay, comics for all. Get people into it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some people will never step foot into a comic book store.
Yep.
But until they start to see comics in their everyday life. But on the other hand, support your local comic book store, people. For a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I have a really deep take on this, but I'm going to, you know, we only have so much time. But I really think that this is an awful idea. And, you know, the reason why, I mean, at GameStop, if you know anything about that company, they've been struggling for a while. And I think this is another way for them to try to like broaden like their, you know, people coming into their store and buying things. And that's totally fine. But when you have a company generally that doesn't know anything about that retail space, diving into it, it usually doesn't go over well. And the things that I've heard so far about how they're, you know, kind of doing this, is they're going with a trial effort with maybe 40 stores. That's smart. But even then, every single one of those stores is going to have a significant, you know, debt into, you know, that Diamond account. And then when I heard that they were going to have the comics on, you know, the Diamond brand Spinner X, I just wanted to like pull my hair out, because anybody who's a comic fan who, you know, I mean, Spinner X were a part of my childhood, but Spinner X should be forever retired from the comic industry, period, because they do nothing but damage comics. And that sucks, you know. And so as a kid, you're going in there to buy like a comic for $4.99 after you bought a $60 video game, you know, if it's a new one, and you know, your comics are already messed up. You know, but understanding how like certain retail spaces have brought on comics into their industry, it's interesting, because Hastings, you know, not more than a year and a half ago, was the largest comic book seller in the entire country. And
really?
that actually killed their business. You know, they're I'm friends with someone who worked for Hastings for 15 years. And when Hastings closed their doors, I think they were between $30 and $40 million in debt to Diamond. And the way that they purchased their comics and the way that they provided them, you know, to people who wanted to buy them was really problematic. And it was because they didn't understand the space. They didn't understand that retail space, and they didn't understand the industry, and it hurt them so bad. And now we don't have Hastings anymore. There used to be five, I think maybe six Hastings just here in Boise, Idaho, and they're all gone. And it's a bummer, you know? So I really don't know that it's a good idea. I think what you're saying, like Comics for All, like pushing out more exposure for comics is awesome. But I think in terms of business, for GameStop overall, I think it's a bad idea for them personally.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Yeah.
I just kind of get the feeling like GameStop is in some ways, like we said, trying to widen their customer base. I think it's kind of like they're trying to become a nerd store rather than a game store. It's kind of like the less gothy version of Hot Topic.
And better price.
I don't know if it's less gothy. You know, with all the pop figures, I think it's just about there. But
can't buy knee-high platform boots at GameStop. Just saying.
True that.
That depends on what the pre-orders are.
Yeah, Devil May Cry 5 just got announced, so you never know what's going to come out for pre-orders. So. Hopefully, please. Please let Bayonetta 3 come out.
Those would be armpit high boots.
Made by hair. So here's my thing with this whole piece, although, is I think that there's something really special about going to a specialty shop that really cares about the products they sell. And honestly, the last person I want helping me out with my comic books is an 18-year-old to 25-year-old kid that could care less about what's going on as long as their paycheck gets cashed. I don't know. There's just something special about that. And I think that what we can really do is, you know, I think what we might be doing is record another episode here, kind of talking about kind of the love for comics and what makes this, you know, universe so special for us and this space of comic books so special. And what does that mean by, you know, maybe a company like GameStop or somewhere else kind of taking that over? So we'll see, because GameStop, you know, their business model has never been off of new game sales. It's always been off the secondary market. And where does that come in for comic books? You know, are they making this move so they can start buying comic books off of you for a nickel a piece to resell at, you know, 500% margins? Or are they actually trying to get in there to put comic books in more hands?
Right. And I'm glad that you mentioned that too, because that's sort of like the other side to what I'm kind of more focused on the business side. You're focusing on more of the fan standpoint. That's awesome. You know, and I think that, like, man, I mean, the comic book industry is already absolutely unstable, and we have to get out and support like our mom and pop shops. We have to get out and support our specialty shops. You know, I mean, it's great that GameStop, you know, wants to kind of dive into this area where they might be able to provide more exposure to this genre, to this industry that we so love. But if they fail, it's going to hurt an already, like I said, unstable comic book industry, you know, which sells increasingly higher priced comics to an increasingly smaller reader base. And it's just going to hurt the industry as a whole if they fail. And, you know, seeing the writing on the wall, kind of like, you know, making my own little personal business prediction, I don't have high hopes for, I don't have very good, you know, mm-hmm. I just don't think it's going to work.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be a tough piece for them to get in there, and another thing for them to sell in their retail spaces. I think the last GameStop I walked into was last year sometime, and I saw more toys on the walls and more video game swag than I actually saw video games. So it's something interesting. And I think one of my favorite actually new retail markets that are dropping out right now are the mom and pop, like, secondhand retro video game stores, and I like going to those way more than like going to a GameStop, because honestly, I've taken the turn. I'm almost now fully digital with all of my games now. I haven't bought a hard copy anything right. of a game for close to 3 years, maybe more, and GameStop has become something that's obsolete to me, honestly.
Yeah,
I go to GameStop for like the big titles, and that's about it. Like when my Destiny 2 dropped, that sort of thing.
I'd rather download it and have it ready totally. To go. I mean, I'd rather have it downloaded and flip on the damn Switch at midnight. You know?
Copy. I like having a physical copy. That way, if something happens and I forget my account password, I can always just pop the DVD in, the Blu-ray disc in.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, you have to wonder, like, are GameStop's going to be able to convert regular reader, like, convert people into regular readers of comics? I mean, it'd be great if, you know, they're in, you know, these trial stores are basically in, you know, areas where, you know, there aren't you know, mom and pop stores. That these are demographic areas where, you know, we're not going to see like a regular comic store. So, you know, people are going to be actually, they're going to be able to go into this GameStop and actually purchase books and see whether or not they like them and hopefully become comic book fans. And that's awesome. But is that going to be enough in an already precarious retail space that GameStop inhabits to, you know, not only preserve the integrity of, you know, their diamond accounts, but preserve the integrity of their business? I mean, they're already struggling selling like the video games. They're already stuck, you know, struggling, you know, stuff in the space that they understand and know. And so delving into this other area, I don't know.
I don't think they're going to be able to do much. And I want to point out two things. Like, first of all, limited retail space. Those stores tend to be tiny, right? At least everyone I've ever been into has been like strip mall, hole in the wall type of store, right? Comic book stores, some of them are that size, some of them are bigger. So they're not going to have a whole lot of variety because they just don't have the room.
Yeah, they're just going to throw them on a spinner rack. And then what's going to happen is that 90% of those comics on this 90% of those comics on that spinner rack are going to get damaged or messed up and they're not going to sell. And then they're going to throw another, you know, new month of, you know, comics on that spinner rack. And so they're going to end up with a glutton of comics that they're not going to be able to move.
It's going to be the top 10 issues from each one or whatever they decide to do, but it's going to be the top bestsellers. It's not going to be the independent.
It'll be
your smaller things. It's going to be your Batman. It's going to be your Captain America. It'll be your Avengers. But this is the other thing: having those comics out there like that, your audience is going to be, you know, your teenagers and your high schoolers and your college kids who are going to see these movies, who are going to see these characters on the big screen. They're not going to have a ton of money for the comics too. What they're going to do is they're going to come in, they're going to read the issue and then put it back.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it would be interesting. You feel guilty doing that because it's like you're in a specialty store where this is clearly what people like. But in a GameStop, it's that 18-year-old who doesn't care because his paycheck's going to go through on Friday.
You know, if GameStop is listening, let me give him a little bit of advice. If you want to use those spinner racks and that's what you guys are going to do, buy some bags and boards and board your books before you put them on the spinner racks, you know, because not only is that going to prevent what Marley is saying, where people are going to come in and just stand around and read those books. It also is going to, you know, help those books stay in like moderately decent condition so the actual fans who might not have a store in their town or city can come into GameStop and actually pick up their books.
Mm-hmm. All I'm hearing from you right now, Max, is wah, 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 GameStop, do this so that we can take over all of your backlog issues that you never sell, and then we can open up a retail space. That's all I'm hearing. That's all I'm hearing.
The constructive what?
I do appreciate my local comic book store having their issues not always in bag and board, so I can flip through, say, yes, I like the look of this artwork. Let me go and buy this because I'm supporting my local store.
Well, there's something about being able to go through and flip through a comic and see art and see something amazing that you really like and then pulling that off and buying it. So,
totally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're going to move on. We're going to move on from that because I just want to kind of give some spotlight moments to some things, man. I want to talk some comic books with you folks. I miss talking to y'all about some comic books and writers. One of the, you know, the big ones, and I absolutely recommend this gentleman and most of his works, but I know all of you are big fans of what he kind of started here was Infinity Wars, but Jim Starlin, I'd like to kind of give some love to the man and the legend that kind of brought this universe to the big forefront for Marvel. And, you know, I would like to hear what you guys have to say about him, because I don't know as much about Jim Starlin as I know Pete and Max definitely do. And Marley, you probably even know a little bit more about him than I do even, but
I'm terrible with names.
Oh, there you go. Then I'm not going to worry about you as much then. So,
so here's how we're going to do it: is we're going to have Pete and Max sit on that side. Matt, you and I will sit on the side. We'll prop our feet up and just like let him talk.
And here's how we begin. So, if you guys, I would like to talk about Jim a little bit though, and kind of what he's meant to the comic universe, what some of his big works. And really what made the Infinity Wars so special to this industry and the event that created. So if you guys wouldn't mind, man, I'd love to hear kind of your guys' take on Mr. Jim Starlin.
Take it away, Pete.
First of all, you have to love that he's an ex-Navy man from Detroit who helped create Drax the Destroyer, Gamora, and Thanos. And the Master of Kung Fu. Good old Shang-Chi. But yeah, just way too appropriate. And other than that, really, really simply, I remember reading issues in the Infinity Gauntlet as a kid, because I was lucky enough to not only be a comic book kid, a comic book fan who was being enabled by dear sweet parents from a pretty young age, but meeting the right kind of friends too, that even when I hadn't picked up issues, they tended to have stacks. So yeah, that the imagery especially, you know, because that's a lot of good dialogue and a lot of good scenes in there. It's such good storytelling that even though when I was like 11 at the time, even though about half of it, I was like, who is that? Whoa, what happened to him? I was still hooked. I was still just sucked right in. It was all just that the emotion and the tension was just that strong right off, even though I think I started on like issue 2. So I was completely sitting there saying, what is this? It was also a, what is this? It's so awesome. I need to know more.
No, totally. I mean, I think my first exposure to the great Jim Starlin was, you know, probably, you know, when I was a kid in the early 90s, and when he really started to basically take over the revival of the Silver Surfer series. I had always been like enamored by the Silver Surfer, and starting to read that, like this, the volume 4 Silver Surfer done by Jim Starlin and Ron Lim on art. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. And then that sort of like spun into Infinity Gauntlet. And, you know, reading Infinity Gauntlet, just having Starlin and Lim and the great George Perez on that book just completely just rocked my world. And, you know, being a big sci-fi fan and a fan of like space comics in general, I had to devour everything I could could find from Starlin after that. And, you know, I hunted down, you know, the Cosmic Odyssey, you know, that he did with Mike Mignola over at DC that was fantastic. But he also did, you know, a lot of great stuff that wasn't, you know, cosmic or wasn't space oriented. I mean, you had, you know, Death in the Family that he did over at DC for Batman, and Batman the Cult. That was a great, great story. You know, Starlin did so many great things for both publishers, you know, and once I got kind of a little bit more into comics, I kind of went back and, you know, started to buy a lot of those, you know, fantastic Warlock books that he did. And, you know, Starlin, you know, not only was a super accomplished, you know, writer, but he's an amazing artist. And it's just, you know, he's just one of the more sometimes unheralded people in this genre when we're talking about just the success that especially Marvel is enjoying right now with Infinity War. I mean, these are things that in a lot of ways that came out of Starlin's mind. And I think it's important that we, you know, pay our respects to this just amazing person and creator. So
absolutely. I was just scrolling through his bibliography on Wikipedia and I'm like, what hasn't this guy done?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, some of these things, like, I mean, of course, Infinity War, Batman, like you said, Silver Surfer, Spider-Man, The Flash. I mean,
what was some of the stuff you said he did for both publishers, Max? What was some of the stuff he did for DC?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I mentioned that I really enjoyed that he did was he did a mini called Cosmic Odyssey that was done by Mike Mignola. And this was like in the late 80s. And I'm partial to that just because I love, you know, the New Gods and cosmic stuff in general. But it was a lot of great DC characters that you didn't see that much. And it's really a great story because it's, you know, if I'm a big Mignola fan as well. So just seeing Mignola's early pencils on some of that work were just, it's a lot of fun. I'd highly recommend that. So.
Yeah, and New Gods was like the fourth world stuff from Jack Kirby, right? Like,
yeah,
for sure. Yep. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Okay, it's starting to tie in for me. Like, now some things are starting to come in when I get to some of the bigger pictures with that. So that makes more sense. So.
And Death in the Family was when Robin died.
Yeah.
That was especially mind-blowing for kids at that point because, Wolverine's died like 500 times and so Superman and all that, but you never did that occasionally supporting characters, you know, like Spider-Man's next door neighbor or something like that was killed.
Yeah.
And they died and they were never seen again, but it was not done to the main characters.
Yeah.
Even somebody who'd been around for, I think it was what, Max, you may have to back me up here, but it was like, what, a year for Jason Todd as Robin? Right. But even so,
yeah.
Robin.
He was Robin.
Robin. And not only
and
Robin,
he died,
but they
and he went away.
They fan voted him. They fan voted that guy dead too. Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah.
The fans were basically allowed to call two different numbers to choose whether Jason would survive. Or the Joker would basically torture and kill him. You know, I would have been on the voting side of the Joker torturing and killing him as well.
But, you know, and it, yeah. at that time
it was by majority.
Yeah. And at that time it's one of those things as well, right? Where you don't have those major characters being killed off. So of course I think the fans were rabid to see that happen. And how would they really do that with, you know, a Robin, you know, and it's just such a huge, a seminal name like that. So, yeah, and I, it's amazing to hear how much he's been a part of like that. So, Mr. Jim Starlin, super kudos to you, man. We really do appreciate you and what you've done for the industry, and thank you. And please go out and look for Jim Starlin. Give old Turbo Comics a call. Reach out to Turbo Comics on their Facebook. I'm sure they're going to have plenty of stuff there for you that you can reach out and ask for. If you want to support the site in any other way, you can visit Amazon. But once again, go and check out Turbo Comics and see what they've got for you as far as Jim Starlin books are concerned.
Yeah, just a quick plug for Starlin. If you haven't already, definitely go out and get your hands on Thanos, the Infinity Relativity, as well as the Infinity Siblings and the Infinity Finale. You know, those are like, you know, they're probably around like, $16 to $20, but they're hardcover, like, you know, trade paperbacks. So they were released by Marvel and they are absolutely fantastic.
Nice. So, Marley, I know you've read Infinity Gauntlet, right?
Yeah.
So for you, like, what was Infinity Gauntlet to you? Like, that is a very, you know, that is a huge moment in comic books. I mean, what was that to you when you read it?
Part of it, and I will admit that this is maybe like 25% of it, because I read it around the same time as the latest Avengers movie. A large part of it was being able to have extra knowledge over my students who were also talking excitedly about Avengers. Like, yeah, no, that didn't happen in the original comic. For me, it was wonderful. It was like, it was this wonderful epic where you could see just how deeply depraved Thanos was to be going after death like this, where he's trying to do all this stuff. He's trying to impress the girl. Here's Mephisto talking smack and giving him terrible advice as Wingman. Like, he clearly wants him to fail. And here you have this, like, desperate search for enough power, enough allies, enough strength, enough force to stop this, enough willpower even, if you wanted to say, enough people standing up and saying no, ready to give 100% stop whatever's going on here. And just that amassing of heroes and that conglomeration of strength of different types, it's truly epic. It really is.
Nice. No, that's awesome. No, I love it. So that's awesome. Once again, hit up Jim Starlin Books, wherever you can find him. Go support that man and his work. Huge names that he's dealt with the comic books. So that's absolutely amazing. I really did not have a whole lot of history on him, so thank you all for that. For our others,
I'm gonna be checking some of his other stuff out too.
You have to, yeah. That just sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. So with the spotlights, we're gonna continue to shine a couple. I want to go more to the indie side of things as well. I know Pete, you were mentioning another comic book developer, I believe, earlier, a publisher. Who was that? Alterna, yeah.
Alternate comics or alternate reality. Alternate comics,
Valley.
Yeah,
there you go.
Whatever you like.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Alterna.
They are like apparently a growing number of indie publishers these days, in that they are not only small and scrappy, but just delightful people. So dang energetic, so dang friendly, and I love their approach to not only having a good, healthy spread of subject matter. They're promoting the heck out of epic fantasy, crime fiction, superhero, but their thing is that they do very short print runs and only gloss covers and newsprint paper. So not only can you get a brand new throwback if you really want, it's great. They have this inordinate love for having layouts very, very, very much like the Big Two did back in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
For their covers, and I adore that too. But it means that all of them doing all of that means each of their monthly issues is a buck.
Oh wow.
Nice. A buck a piece for the, you know, unless you buy one of their anthologies, the double sized issues, which are $2.
Oh, double the size for $1 more.
So I'm trying out their, I missed their, sadly, their print runs are so small. I missed the latest first issues that I was really interested in, but my local shop got me hooked up with my pull box, getting their new anthology series each time. And you're good. And I love the title so much. And the gals behind the counter thought I was punking them at first, but no, the actual title is It Came Out on a Wednesday.
That's fantastic.
We had an Abbott and Costello like, what? Okay, what's the title? Came out on a Wednesday. Right, which one?
But which one? Which one? I love it. That's fantastic. Anything else from Alterna that you know you think people should also be checking out or looking out for? Where can they find Alterna? Where can they look them up?
Well, I met these wonderful folks on our Twitter account. So if you look for... What was their exact nameage?
Uh-oh. It's okay.
Yeah, at Alterna Comics.
At Alterna Comics.
And yeah. And they've also gotten their own Etsy shop, where they've actually got really, really sweet deals on ridiculously large amounts of their comics for about as much as we're used to paying for one or two graphic novels.
Wow, nice. That's cool. We'll check out Alterna Comics, man. It sounds a lot of fun. I'll definitely have to look them up now since I'm probably going to be laid up for a little bit with this ankle. So more things for me to read and take part in, which is even better. So,
oh, there you go. One specific title, Tinseltown. I haven't been able, that's one of the ones I was trying to look at but missed, but that's their Silver Age Hollywood crime drama.
Nice. Tinseltown. I'm in.
Yeah.
Sweet. So anybody else? Any indie spotlights or anything like that? Any indie comics you guys want to give some love to? Shout outs?
Oh, you want to go first, Marley, or me? I'll go first then.
All right.
All right. So I think like this is a guy, and this is indie, but I mean he's not like super unknown, but I did want to give a quick shout out to him because he's absolutely one of my favorite like writers and artists in the genre. And this is his name is Eric Powell. And this guy has been, you know, yes. You might know him really well from, you know, something like The Goon. You know, The Goon was his original series, and it was, you know, debuted on Avatar Press. He won an Eisner for that for best single issue. I think it was when Dark Horse started to release The Goon. But, you know, Eric Powell's work has been absolutely fantastic. And I wanted to kind of highlight a book that he's been working on for about a year now called Hillbilly. And Hillbilly is just really, really fun. And, you know, it's about basically a guy who, you know, it's on basically it's self-published, which is awesome. It's on Albatross Funny Books imprint. You know? And it's basically about a guy named Rondell who is a man that was born without any eyes, but he has like this way of seeing, but I don't want to give any spoilers out there, but you know, he's basically out to rid the world of, you know, foul demons and witches and monsters and things like that. And you know, it's really, really fun. If you're a fan of, you know, Powell's stuff with The Goon, it has a lot of similarities to that. There's a lot of, you know, mayhem and drama and humor and horror, and it's just great. And if you haven't picked it up yet, or if you're a fan of, you know, anything that might sound like it's part of those types of areas, you know, I would definitely seek it out, and you won't be sorry, because, you know, again, Eric Powell's work is just underrated and absolutely fantastic.
Nice. No, that sounds fantastic. I'm a big fan of Hillbilly. I really like that series. I highly recommend that as well now. So get at it.
Yeah.
Dang, awesome, man. We still some of my, that was, oh, that's so good.
I loved The Goon. I need to read Hillbilly. Yeah, for sure. I've known about it, but I have not gotten to
Hillbilly's,
it. I need to get there.
Hillbilly's good. Hillbilly's really good.
That's great. I mean, I didn't think that anything could top The Goon, but Hillbilly is, it's so, so good. Like, you got to check it out.
Nice. So the one that I'm going to mention is a little of an indie spotlight. But it's the story is really great because I'm a huge fan of things like Day of the Dead and the Dia de los Muertos. I'm a huge fan of it. I love that kind of stuff. I love the Mexican art artistry around it, the sugar candy skulls, all those types of things. But I was just kind of browsing through Comixology because, like I said, I'm kind of laid up with this foot, so I can't really get out and go through comic book shops. So I was kind of looking for some stuff to read, and I came across Lady Mechanica. And I know that's been out for a while now, but the one that I'm actually wanting to promote here is the Lady Mechanica, the La Dame de la Muerte. So the whole idea there is this was the Dia de los Muertos mini series that they ran, and they have a full culmination of all those books on Comixology right now for like $6. And the art and the story is just over the top fantastic. It has a lot of those kind of ghostly vibes to the story that I'm really into. I'm a huge fan of like paranormal stuff, things like that as well. And this is a really, really kick-ass take on that. And I cannot recommend that stuff enough for you all to go and check out. Joe Benitez, M.M. Chen were both writers on this, writer on these series. So look at it, check it out. Like I said, just for the art alone, it'll be worth every piece of entry you can give it. It's just fantastic.
Totally is. And I didn't actually know anything about Lady Mechanica until I went to a couple conventions down in California. And, you know, he had his own booth, and his booth was just unreal awesome because you just see all of this amazing, you know, art everywhere. And I was just automatically fell in love and bought a ton of, you know, so this, you know, sort of like steampunk reimagining of history through the Victorian area. And it was just awesome. And not only that, but if you ever go to a con and you see, you know, Joe Benitez there, I mean, he is one of the coolest guys ever, and he'll sign all your books. And they're just super nice people that are always at his booth. So
yeah, every time I've seen him in like WonderCon or anything like that, he's been super nice. You know, I wish I knew more about some of his stuff at the times that I actually seen his booths, but yeah, that steampunk Victorian era kind of reimagining of all the art he does and the stories he tells through Lady Mechanica, can't recommend it enough. It is fantastic. And man, I was like, jaw was dropped the whole time I read this Day of the Dead special. Like, I was like, this is phenomenal. Like, so damn good. Loved it. Good. Loved every bit of it.
Awesome.
Nice. So, Marley, how about you? Any indie spotlights, or you're all good? We'll keep moving because she is not making a sound right now. She had muted her headphone.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Ah, there she is.
Sorry, I was making a little bit of noise over here, and I didn't want to.
Oh, we appreciate you for that.
Does the stuff of legend count?
Oh, you're going to do Stuff of Legend? Okay, I'm totally going to let you do Stuff of Legend because I was going to talk about it as well. But yeah, Volume 5, Call to Arms Part 3. I'll let you talk about it, though, if you've already read it.
I have not gotten that far. I'm still working my way through Omnibus 1 and 2. I have this much to read. It's like 2.5-3 inches. That is so pretty. Please give me your stuff.
Yeah, it's so good. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if anybody has not picked up the Stuff of Legends, it is one of those ones that I have to read through slowly because I would devour it and then be incredibly depressed. It's heavy. It's all sepia-toned, beautiful pencil work. It's all gorgeous stuff, and it's just, I mean, it's like your worst childhood nightmares mixed with your greatest childhood fantasies playing with your toys.
Bit of that and more. It's other level. CP Wilson, I mean, the guy is just, it just doesn't get any better for what you see in this. It is the dark, twisted storybook that you wish you had as a child. And thirdworld.com, Third World Studios on their Twitter, hit them up. They are fantastic people. We love them so much. They're also, you know, Super Fogies is a part of them as well. It just doesn't get better.
THIRD.
Yes.
THIRD.
That is Third World, Third and Elite Speak, THIRD.
Yeah, so it is so good. Like, Indian in the Cupboard meets, I don't even know, your worst nightmares. Like,
I was like, going to say Dean Koontz or maybe Clive Barker.
it's the monster under your bed conspires with the monster in your closet, and your toys have to save you.
Oh, that's so good.
Oh, But it's, and it
sounds like an amazing movie, and or Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
And it's so great though, because it's like, on the one level, it's like it's speaking to all those childhood games and those fears and concerns and worries and those nighttime things that go bump in the night. But on the other hand, as the adult reading it, and you're like, this is truly and not only an epic journey, but there's a philosophical level to it where you're like, this is something I aspire to. It's just
And it's the consciousness of all the toys, right? Like, some of the toys just have kind of a main driving force, and they're the drones, the lemmings, if you will. But the main characters and the people, the actual toys that they're spotlighting in this, from everything from Slugger to the bear, you know, to the boogeyman and the jester, all of these different characters, they're the consciousnesses that they have and the thought processes that drive them to save the boy, to fight back the darkness, to do the boogeyman's bidding. All of those things are just fantastic.
It's a little bit Lord of the Rings.
Here's the thing. You could combine Lord of the Rings, Toy Story. You could combine Indian in the Cover. You could combine, you know, we talk about Nemo and Slumberland. And so many other things to try and say that that's what this is like. But that's what's so cool about the stuff of legend, is it's its own thing, because it's the stuff of legend, which almost nothing is. Like, it's really crazy. I love it. It lives up to the name of legend for sure.
It's epic. I mean, it's.
And if I may, I know it's going to be hard to stop either of you in your tracks.
Yeah, here. We're moving forward though.
But no. I was just going to say that any art addicts out there too, I can absolutely vouch that. Yeah. Wow, the look of these books are gorgeous, especially if you're huge fans of ink or charcoal art in particular. That's not exactly the mediums, but if you are a huge lover of that type of look, or even like daguerreotype type photography, it's very just like Matt keeps saying, it's not the same as that, but if you're already in headspace where you say, oh, that I like that, try
if you've
this.
Ever if you've try ever it. Read The Invention of Hugo Cabret, the illustrations in that are in some ways reminiscent to the illustrations in this, where it's like a little bit childhood picture book but with so much detail. And the pacing is wonderful, and the flow between things is just, it pulls you in. It's
And it really is, and it's just fun. It's just fun. I love it so much. Like,
oh,
I said,
heart-wrenching though. I can't finish reading it in one go because I'm like, oh,
it is wholly dark and depressing in some spots, and yeah, it's tough to sit into it for a long period of time as well. You got to take a break sometimes, because it tears at you from the inside on some of those stories, especially early on. It's just like nothing is what it seems. Nothing is there for face value.
Yeah. It's like, couldn't you have given me something easier, like carrying the One Ring up to Mordor? I mean, like, I'd walk all the way barefoot. Just give me that instead. This is just like, oh,
have you gotten to the second omnibus yet?
Not yet.
Oh, God. There is a couple of really big moments that you still have not hit yet that if I do not get a messenger call from you when those happen to you, I will be very disappointed in you.
There might be some crying and some why.
There probably will. Beep.
Oh, I do have one. I correct myself. I do have one request of throwing in. One last one.
Hey, there's nothing,
because I don't want to interrupt the love train.
This is just for our. These are for any time we can give a little bit of love to something great. I'm all about it. Doesn't matter how much we put in here.
Well, something I wanted to mention, because it's actually a little bit personal to me as well. I actually managed to snag the last two copies of Reconstruction.
Awesome.
And for our dear sweet listeners, Reconstruction, as in Puerto Rico, Reconstruction, Reminiscing and Rebuilding Puerto Rico, produced by Edgardo Miranda Rodriguez. I'm not fully Hispanic by blood, but Nana was Puerto Rican. And not only do I have a buddy who's one of the, well, actually, Marley and I both have a buddy who's one of the best shooters the Vanguard's ever seen in the clan on Destiny 2, and was by our sides in Destiny 1 as well, who got, thank God, evacuated and given a place to stay by a few of the other players, which was pretty awesome. But we've still got TT Cookie and a few other folks who are my dad, on my dad's side of the family, still over there. And over there, and even though it's been since last year, since two hurricanes hit, it's two hurricanes that pounded the crap out of an island. And their electrical system was not the best to begin with. There's a lot of people, thousands of people over there, who still don't have any electricity since last September. And this is an anthology book put together by a lot of Puerto Rican artists and writers, and a lot of who are living there or whose family's from there, as well as a lot of modern and older school artists and writers too. And you'll catch that was my comment on Twitter, in case you guys are wondering, and which one of us put it up, in case our listeners are. But it's a tough read, because that was a tough time.
Yeah,
totally.
But there's a lot of bitterness in the tales here too. There's also so much hope. And not only do you get artwork like this, just so I can get comments from my co-hosts, our listeners at home.
Beautiful, beautiful pages that he is showing off here.
And all the way on out to this, you might even recognize some of these guys. Yeah. We even get a return from the Icon characters from DC, 90s throwback. Because DC let Somos Arte LLC use them with permission. Say what you will. Think what you end up thinking about any of the stories, any of the art in here. Also, 100% of the proceeds go to relief efforts.
Yeah.
Nice.
So.
And if that doesn't motivate you to buy this comic, it's got Wonder Woman on the cover.
Yeah.
So that's my pick. And La Borriqueña.
Nice.
So I got it for Father's Day present for myself and my dad, because I figured the contribution would be a good father-son thing too.
Nice.
That's so cool. We've been promoting that and really, really hard on the Turbo Comics website, because it definitely is something that we really want to support, and it breaks our heart to see what's gone on down there, and it's really awesome. Like you said, it's so cool that it features stories from so many great Puerto Rican artists and DC Comics heavy hitters too. I mean, Gail Simone does work on that book, and it's I can't stress enough how great that book is, and how great it is for Puerto Rico, and how it represents all the geek Ricans out there, and geek Ricans, you guys need to go out and get it. I mean, if you haven't got it, go out and get it. It supports a great cause, but more than that, it's a great, great book, and to see the people. I know Nerdist just published a story, I think it was actually today, where they talked about Puerto Rico Comic Con that happened May 18th through the 20th. And, it's great to see those people out there, trying to, to bond together and have a good time in just the most adverse conditions still, months and months after, this disaster struck their island. And so it's a good cause, and
nice.
Go support it.
Yeah, the reconstruction, RICAN, please go check that out. That's something huge, and it's something where you're going to get a lot in return for that purchase. From those artists and writers, that's something amazing that Pete was showing off there. So I will absolutely be snagging mine probably here during the show. I'll be pulling it off of some site, I'm sure. So Matt, that's awesome.
Matt, to go ahead and make it personal for you too, because he has officially become the new Where's Waldo of the comic book world. Even Swampy shows up.
Oh yes. Even his little slight run from in like DC Metal and things like, his little, not run, I should say his like one splash page when he about killed everybody there. But, I love it.
He said, get off my lawn.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. Issue 2 or whatever it was, Dark Knight Metal. But, it is one of those things where I love that Swampy's popping up all over the place. And the fact that he's in that just shows how great of a guy Swampy is, because he's out there helping people. Always out there.
Yeah, so be like Swamp Thing. Be like Wonder Woman. love everyone and help them out.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love
it.
And just kind of speaking some of their causes, I do want to touch on this a little bit just because, you know, last month in May, we did talk a little bit about Mental Health Awareness Month, and we'd mentioned things like NAMI, the National Mental Illness Awareness and things like that. And, you know, we did lose a pretty amazing storyteller, even though he's not directly tied to comics. He had a lot of fun with comics. And Anthony Bourdain recently, you know, took his own life. And more than ever, you know, talking about the reconstruction, talking about helping others. Don't forget to help yourselves as well. Mental illness is a huge thing, and it's a huge concern for so many people out there. And if you're listening to this, I do know that you're loved. Do know that even though I may never met you before, I love you as a person. I love you as a human being, and reach out for help, reach out to those lines. You're not alone in this world for that kind of stuff. So
there are even text message lines and online where if you don't have to pick up the phone and talk, if that's hard, you can just text someone and get a response. You can do it with a chat over the computer instead. There are resources.
Absolutely. Hit us up on Twitter. If you're ever in a moment where you want to just say some fun stuff and have a conversation, anybody from this show can reach out to you and talk to you as well. You know, I know people out there that are suffering from mental illnesses. I know people who've lost their lives to mental illnesses. And when I see stuff like people like Anthony Bourdain, who once again is just such a prolific storyteller that we've lost in this world, that's too many. That one is always too many. So please find ways to help out, to seek help, to help others. It's always a huge piece. And I know, like I said, he's not a direct comic tie-in, but, you know, he has done a lot around the industry as well. I know Max actually, and Pete were talking about some stuff with comic books. Yeah. So
actually, if you want to show some love to him and his, and maybe hopefully help other people out as a result, because you're supporting his work still, Hungry Ghosts. If you ever wanted to read a comic book about cannibal ghosts by a 4-star chef, well, there you go.
Well, there it is, Hungry Ghosts. Hell yes, man.
Yeah, was it a like Get Hero Blood and Sushi? You know, I mean, this is something that you know, that he helped to work on. And I mean, Bourdain, if you know anything about him, he was an insane fan of comics. He was a major collector since his childhood, and he loved old school horror comics, humor comics, underground comics. Just they rocked his world. And like you said, he was one of our, you know, best, you know, pop culture storytellers. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking what happened to him. So if you're feeling down, definitely seek out someone that can help you, because, you know, one is too many. If we lose anybody, it's too many.
Yep, absolutely.
Amen.
100%. So thank you to all of our listeners out there. It is phenomenal for us and letting us shine a little light on all those things. We're not just a podcast here trying to get our name out there and have amazing conversations with really amazing people on Twitter, it's been happening, which has been really cool, but we care about the people out there in this world as well, and we want to give back as much as we can. So please go and support those amazing causes with the reconstruction of Puerto Rico and your mental health awareness. So we love you all out there. So without further ado, we can kind of move on here a little bit. So the big topic of the night that I kind of want to get into, we have had finally the culmination and now the progress from probably one of the cooler events I've seen in a while with DC and with Dark Knight Metal. And I loved where that all came up to and where it went. I loved some of the finishes there, and we even got a brand new comic from it in a new Justice League. What do you guys think of some of this stuff? What do you think of the finishes of Dark Knight Metal? Where do you think we're at now with Justice League? You know, how do you feel about this huge earth-shaking event from DC?
Well, first of all, how many of you do I need to stay out of spoiler territory for?
I'm good.
Can you mute me for?
Yeah, Dark Knight Metal, I'm all up on.
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
I have not caught up on Dark Knight Metal, and I've read the Justice League number one.
Marley, might be a time for you to go grab a new ice pack then.
Actually, we're switching to a hot pack out because we're trying to get rid of the bruise now. So, yeah. My swollen ankle and I are going to walk over this way and maybe pick up some more sangria.
Fair enough.
Yeah, suckers.
So, All right, so spoiler corner starts now. Dude, everything from Snyder and Capullo keeping their promise of, it says dark and it says metal, but don't worry, it's not going to be all grim and horror. It's going to be awesome, and it's just going to be awesome. And I looked at that, and at first I gave it a pass for months. Like, Dark Knight's metal, Nightmare Universe. All right, sounds interesting, but yeah, I need more grim dark, like I need a hole in the head. And I read it, and man, it was like the best adventure stories from, dang it, I'm still doing the fanboy thing of, compared to this. All right, so here's the thing. The Nightmare Universe exists. It's literally the parallel universe, not just reality, but the universe where all the parallel realities that are created by and or populate our nightmares, it seems like it's a little of both, come from. And well, the Batmen get together from there, and oh my, the best, oh holy shit. the best what moment was definitely not the Swamp Thing moment. No. It was Superman picking up Batman and carrying him away after deciding that, yeah, that's Bruce's heartbeat. I almost don't want to say it anyway, just in case there are some of you diehards who say, no, I want to hear this anyway. No, it's a good moment. It's a really, really, I'm not going to say it because it's that good of a moment.
So what do you think, just to ask you, Pete, like, what do you think Marvel is doing that DC isn't, or vice versa? I mean, why do you think DC, in my opinion, continues to just rock our worlds with so many great comics, so many great stories, and where do you think Marvel could improve upon, I mean, to kind of, you know, keep up, I guess, a little bit and reinvigorate a lot of those characters that, you know, we love over there at Marvel?
All right, well, I'm going to be fair. I'm not going to go for a compliment sandwich. I'm just going to try and gripe first and then say what's awesome. But to be fair, I think they're both making the same mistake. And that's especially in this day and age where the movies are knocking it out of the park. Yeah. Even yours, DC, because even your failures have made many millions, you know, and that's not too bad. Please, 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 especially if you're trying to make a giant event to get everybody interested, publish the freaking series as a freaking series. I don't want a mini or maxi series. I don't want a short-term story that is two series or three or four when it's really all the same story. That makes it hard to keep track, and that will turn us off. Please stop doing that. It even just makes it confusing to find them. Now, that being said, that you're both doing that and need to stop doing it. Like you guys, like Marvel and Disney and Warner and DC are listening right now. Love you guys. I think the main thing that even though they have similar glut problems, I think the main thing that DC and Marvel are doing really well is actually completely different from one another. DC is telling almost completely unified stories. And I don't even mean that everything has to cross over, but just that with few exceptions, one marries really smoothly into the other. Take Dark Knight's metal. That actually starts in Snyder and Capullo's New 52 Batman run. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to read it at all to enjoy it. As many people I've heard from about metal in particular say, because they didn't read New 52 Batman. You know, and you shouldn't need to do that. You should be able to just pick up a story and say, hey, I want to pick up this story, and that they're doing smashingly.
Right, definitely.
Not to mention, or the bunch of new titles they launched in right after Dark Knight's metal. All of them say,
do you think Dark that DC metal. Do you think that DC is taking more chances than Marvel is with their properties, with their characters, you know, with their even creative teams, and letting them really kind of like dive into areas that those characters don't necessarily, you know, venture into that often, where Marvel isn't doing that as much, maybe?
Oh, storytelling? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. For example, Marvel is still I'm going to be a little snippy, apologies, but Marvel is still relationship phobic because, oh, that'll alienate readers. One of their launch titles that came out right after Dark Knights is called Silencer. Mm-hmm. And fans of Green Arrow and or the Warhammer 40K novels will know Dan Abnett, and he's penning a story about a mother with a toddler and a doting husband and a secret life as an assassin for the for the league that she and Talia al Ghul used to belong to. And I just read issue one, and it's delightful, whereas Marvel still won't let Spider-Man be married because that'll hurt sales numbers.
Yeah.
While they're still bringing back the Fantastic Four.
Certainly. Yeah.
And Batman's probably going to kick off some kind of craze, hopefully it's going to be a lot of comic sales, just in general, we'll find out, but some kind of craze at the very least when he gets married next month.
Right.
I'm actually excited for that. It's a freaking fictional character, and I'm excited for that.
I'm excited about it too. I mean, I think that, I totally agree with everything you're saying. And it's really interesting to think about, like, you know, how DC has essentially taken over, basically a declining market. I mean, they're basically taking over this market, this comic book market where, they always were like second or third string for a long time between Marvel and Image duking it out for years. And, it's interesting to see, how successful Marvel is, on the movie screen. And it's really interesting to see that, it's probably time to stop pretending that big mass media projects, like Marvel is doing, with their movie studio, they don't significantly impact comic book orders at all. And neither did DC stuff. I mean, you had Justice League Wonder Woman, you had Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and Logan and Ragnarok Thor and Spider-Man Homecoming. I mean, when the year ended in 2017, there wasn't a Justice League or a Wonder Woman or Guardians of the Galaxy or even a Wolverine book in the top 10 sold. I mean, so, and Marvel canceled Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's really interesting to see how DC is kind of like almost just completely ignoring what's going on the movie screen and proceeding with things that really get, the juices flowing for comic fans like Metal and like the Doomsday Clock series, which, charted really high and things like that. And I think they're taking a little more chances and they're drawing, significant talent onto their books where Marvel's, they're kind of just, it seems like they're treading water. I mean, they had their Marvel Legacy relaunch and I don't think it went entirely as well as they would have liked with that entire promotional push, even though that Marvel Legacy book was the most ordered issue of last year. The Legacy launch, relaunch just stalled across the line. And, it was really hurt, Marvel's order levels. And you had a lot of customer cynicism there after that. And so it's really interesting to see, what one company is doing to really invigorate, a buyer's market in a declining market and what the other company was the stalwart of the industry for so many years is doing. So
one thing I do think that Marvel's doing much better though. Sorry, sweetie, but yep, I can definitely let you roll for a while if you allow me this one. One thing I do think that Marvel's doing much, much, much better than DC though is DC almost completely yanked the digital download copy codes from their books. Now it's only number ones and special issues, like the Action Comics special, for example, they put out recently. And that's fine. That's cool. I actually managed to share a copy of Batman Annual number 2 with, yet more Batman and Catwoman with one of our Malice Cast Life folks that way, because she's a huge Catwoman fan, and that made me happy. But that's where I have to give much kudos to Marvel and kind of shake my head at DC a little bit, because especially in this day and age, it's the information age, has been for four decades now officially, and you're making it harder for us to take the friends or family members or other, or other loved ones who we all have who are long distance and say, hey, or even just have a tight budget and just say, hey, read this. This was really good. Thought of you. You should take a look at it and just give them the code. That totally. Is a master stroke on Marvel's part. Whether they did that intentionally or not, I honestly can't tell. And a big bowl of dumb flakes from DC for saying, let's get rid of that. Yeah.
And honestly, the number of times I had finished reading a digital issue and like on the Marvel app on my iPad and wanted to hit buy the next book because they've left me at such a cliffhanger. It's a wonderful strategy.
You did run out and get as many Gwenpool graphic novels as you could afford.
I did. Six issues? Gwenpool. Yeah. Yeah, I got one or two because Peter was kind enough to share. And I got hooked. I'm buying the trades because I want to have them all nice and neat so I can read them at any time I want.
Oh, I'm sorry, sweetie. You started rolling, and I realized I lied to you. There is one other surprising thing that I think Marvel is doing much better than DC. I'm noticing their events are tying to each other, not so much on like, great big shakeups throughout the Marvel universe. No, take for example Infinity Countdown and The Hunt for Wolverine. You can actually read, I've been reading both of those series and really enjoying the heck out of them, incidentally. Highly recommended if you want great just popcorn space adventure in your comic books on the Infinity side. And great Wolverine stuff if you want to read Hunt for Wolverine, but they actually intersect. But even then, you can still read them separately. And that, I really appreciate the heck out of that, almost as much as I appreciate the quality of the writing.
Cool.
And that's really all I can think of at the moment. But yeah, Ms. Marbs, I know you had opinions.
Well, and we've been here. We've heard from two of our encyclopedias and experts here. As a newcomer, I have to say, just write good stories. Write good stories and make them easily accessible. Where it's like, I don't need to know a million things about your character from the 70s. And I will probably pick it up and read it because my local comic book shop guy will tell me, this is really good. Read this. Write good stuff. Give me good stories. That's all I want. That'll sell. Good stories sell money.
Amen.
I know. It's more complicated than that, but I mean, yeah, if you make it easy, people are more likely to do things.
I don't know if it is more complicated than that.
I wonder if Matt's having problems with his microphone here. Yeah, he might be. Yeah, I mean, just to basically kind of go back to writing good, the writing good story aspect. I think you're right. I mean, I think it's hard for some people to find like a jumping in point. And I'm saying this painfully so, by the way, because I do want those books that are like just inundated with little tiny details from the whole like lexicon of that character's existence from the 70s. But I get it. I get where new fans are coming from. Like it can be hard to find that jumping off point. The great thing about that is go ahead.
It's with going with your thought before I lose mine. It's kind of like really good children's television, where there's a level for the kids where they find it absolutely hilarious because the guy fell down the stairs, right? As the adult, though, when you're sitting there watching this with your 5-year-old, there's another level of jokes that are for the adults that is absolutely wonderful. Right. I mean, Muppets did this wonderfully. If you watch any of the Muppets Tonight, if you watch any Muppet movie, there's a level of jokes for the kids and then there's a level of jokes for the adults. There could be the same thing in any good comic story where there is a level of entertainment and grab for new fans. And then there's the level for the super fans who've been there for like 20 years following this character.
So you always have like those Easter eggs that are going to be out there and you're always going
to notice Easter eggs or like the little lines of dialogue or like the reference to, I had a friend who used to dress in red once and he doesn't anymore. That comment where it's like, yep, okay, great. What happened there?
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. And we had such a great time filming this, or actually recording this episode. We've actually split it in two. So this is the end of part one. We hope you enjoyed it. And get ready for part two to post very shortly, within another 24 to 48 hours. We really do thank you all for your time and patience. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at All for Comics if you would like to join in on any of these conversations we've had today, or to talk about any of the opinions we had on here as well. If you'd like to offer up any other ideas, anything like that, please let us know. And hope you enjoy the episode, and keep an eye out for part two.